Welcome to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a serialized novel by Samuel Ligon, published for the first time in The Inlander and broadcast by Spokane Public Radio. Miller Kane is made possible by Sprint and The Inlander. Previously on Miller Kane. For years, Miller had been making his living traveling the country from one mass shooting to the next, offering comfort to survivors and making a handsome profit off their loss. But this time, it's different. The shooting found him. Miller and 8-year-old Carlene were visiting Laura Ingalls Wilder's house in Missouri, of Little House on the Prairie fame, and had latched onto a group of school kids on a field trip. Suddenly, cops were everywhere, there to secure all the kids who, by the luck of being on a field trip, had become the few survivors of America's latest school shooting. Miller isn't sure what to do next. He and Carlene have been on the road for months, ever since Carlene's mother, Lizzie, was locked in jail for shooting and injuring Carlene's deadbeat dad. And the charm of the road is gone. A warning to listeners, this episode is fictional, but it deals with the subject of mass shootings and may not be suitable for all audiences. Now, here's author Samuel Ligon.
Chapter 7, Part 7. It would be hours before he'd learn anything about the massacre, and days before he'd know the whole story, if such a thing were possible, that 18 children who'd been absent that day and 26 children who'd been on a field trip were the only students left at Cedar Creek Elementary School. Every teacher but one, every administrator and staff member murdered, plus 13 cops, one shooter, and 431 children, ages 5 to 11, 498 dead, double what Custer had lost at the Greasy Grass, four times the count of Mountain Meadows, 100 times the Boston Massacre, more dead children than at any mass murder in American history. But he didn't know that yet, and neither did Carlene. He wanted to keep her from it, which was impossible. The news crews were already checking into the hotel, reporters everywhere, plus state and federal cops pouring into town. Miller only had the room for one more night and couldn't extend beyond that, not that he wanted to. It was just he didn't know where to go, what to do. He scanned the papers while Carlene changed into her swimsuit. He'd known it was a major massacre because of the news vans everywhere, traffic clogging every road, the cops in town and at Laura's earlier, but the numbers were impossible. Hundreds dead? How could that be? He needed to sit tight, make a plan, keep what he could from Carlene until he knew their next move. In the meantime, he would not let her out of the room. People would be crying everywhere, shocked, numb, enraged. There was nowhere the damage wouldn't be palpable, and she'd seen enough already. He told her the pool was closed. But, she said, and he said, no buts. They ordered pizza, watched a movie, played Go Fish. Carlene cried and wanted to know why someone would do such a thing. Miller said he didn't know why, that nobody knew. It was a sickness and a hatred and something else. And we were failing to stop it, he didn't say, another kind of sickness. They were quiet for a while, and then Carlene said, do you have any jacks? And Miller said, go fish. Outside, the media and cops and scammers were pouring into town the way deadheads used to arrive before a show, transforming everything for the length of their stay, though massacre sites never returned to normal. But tell me what happened exactly, Carlene said. Miller looked at his phone, pretending to read the news. You know what I know, he said. But how many kids? Carlene said. He didn't want her swimming in it minute to minute, hour to hour. Miss Julie said all of them, she said. I don't know about that, Miller said. Ever since they'd left Laura's, he'd kept her as close as he could, trying to determine what she needed and when, as if the right amount of love at the crucial moment might somehow make everything okay. Not the kids at Laura's, though, she said, and Miller said, thank goodness. If Carlene weren't here, he'd have been out meeting survivors, handing out cards, showing different sides of himself. low-key but visible to those who'd benefit from spiritual profiles in the days ahead, outraged with the outraged, who he'd do his best to avoid later, broken for everyone, because there was no way not to be broken, especially at a massacre this size. One dead kid was unbearable, 10 unthinkable. He didn't know what hundreds meant or how to handle thousands of melting survivors. No way would he expose Carlene to that, no matter how much obligation and opportunity were here. "We're leaving in the morning," he told her. "No," she said, looking up from her cards. "What about the animals?" He told her how the shelter pets could comfort survivors, if only for a little while. "We need to go to the Humane Society," she said. Miller's phone buzzed. "Your mom," he said, handing it to Carlene. She pulled her bonnet brim over her eyes as she told Lizzie about Laura's house, her bed and bathroom and books, her cookies, her daughter's donkey, the gift shop and museum, providing almost no opportunity for Lizzie to talk until she finally mentioned the shooting, almost as an afterthought, as if she knew to downplay it. "No, it wasn't there," she said, "at a school somewhere." It would be best for Carlene, for both of them, if Miller had the resources to take care of her in the months and years ahead. But there'd be more shootings down the road if he couldn't find money another way, or maybe he really would go back to teaching. "She wants you," Carlene said, handing him the phone. "Hey there," Miller said, trying to sound upbeat, and Lizzie said, "Did you really take her to a massacre?" Miller stood and moved to his own bed. If Carlene hadn't been sitting across from him, he'd have hung up on Lizzie for accusing him like that, as if he'd hurt Carlene when it was Lizzie who'd asked him to take care of her in the first place. And he'd done everything for her, for both of them. "I'm not sure what you mean," he said. "I mean," she said, "why would you take her anywhere near there?" "I didn't," he said. "You did. It came to us," he said. "So get her out of there." "It's miles from here," he said, "two towns over." Carlene sat watching him. "Please," Lizzie said. "We're safe," Miller said, and Lizzie said, "You'd understand if you were a parent," as if he wasn't a parent. "Please just do this," she said. He could hear her falling apart through the static. "You don't want her anywhere near it either," she said. "I know that." Of course he didn't, but it could come anywhere, to anyone, at any time. Lizzie should know that. Everyone should, but no one could, maybe, unless it had already come. "We're heading to Jamestown tomorrow," he said. "No," Carlene said. "Jamestown," Lizzie said. "We have to get the animals," Carlene said. Miller shushed her. "Far away," he said to Lizzie, though he couldn't imagine getting back on the road now that they'd almost settled down. "I can't do this," Lizzie said. "I swear to God, me in here and her in that awful place." "I know," Miller said. "Would you hold her for me?" "I will," Miller said, and then she said something swallowed by the roar. "Your mom wants me to hug you," he said to Carlene. She stood on her bed and they hugged. Miller understood exactly how Lizzie felt. He wanted to hold Carlene as tight as he could, never let her go. But he didn't want her to see or feel all the fear in him. She started a new doll while he pretended to read. He poured whiskey and waited for her to sleep so he could fall into the massacre news, but she stayed awake for hours. They listened to Puff the Magic Dragon over and over, Carlene humming along while Miller drank a second and a third whiskey in the dark.
You've been listening to Miller Kane, A True and Exact History, a novel by Samuel Ligon, published in weekly installments by The Inlander, with archived audio at SpokanePublicRadio.org/MillerKane. Our theme music is by Indian Goat. I'm your producer, Chris Messini. Join us next week for the latest episode of Miller Kane.